This week on WFAE Talks, Senate lawmakers make another move to take power away from local government, and it has nothing to do with the airport.
The bill provides that in no case can a county levy a local sales and use tax in excess of 2.5%, so it sort of creates an overall cap.
Also at the State House, Governor McCrory makes perhaps the most controversial appointment of his administration, a new head of the Environment, Transportation? No. Poet Laureate, of course. Plus the bureaucratic maze involved in getting government to approve a sign. Coming up next on WFA Talks. And hello, I'm Greg Collard, news director at WFAE, and with me is Lisa Miller.
Hey.
Education reporter, back from the Netherlands. Is that where you went?
That's where I went, yeah.
Is it the Netherlands or Netherlands?
You maybe make it sound less like the hinterlands.
Hinterlands,
and,
yeah.
And say the Netherlands.
Netherlands, yeah. Did you have fun?
I had a great time. Yeah. It was really fun, yeah. We got to see them root on the Netherlands in the World Cup, but it was a little bit more subdued than expected, and mm-hmm. It was a good time.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Are you recovered from from jet lag?
I'm sort of recovered from jet lag. Yeah. So
you're going to be talking to two people who are completely sleep deprived.
Yeah. Yes. Ben Bradford is also the voice you hear. He's tired because he spent last night covering the
biggest sit-down dinner in Charlotte's history, and probably North Carolina's history.
Over 10,000 people?
Yeah, over 10,000 people.
And
all fit and packed into this area of the Charlotte Convention Center, just table after table after 1,000, literally 1,000 tables, which I think actually is more impressive to see than the number itself suggests. Mm-hmm.
Is the Alpha Kappa Alpha Black Sorority?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. They do. They have a biannual, which is every 2 years, whereas biannual is twice a year.
Just biannual.
Mm-hmm. And so they have a biannual gathering called a boule. Mm-hmm. All of the chapters meet, and it's this big tradition for them. So they actually have the record for the Guinness certified record for the biggest gathering in the world, but at least in the U.S., which is 15,000 for a dinner, for a sit-down dinner, because it's the sit-down dinner thing, 15,000 plus in Washington, D.C. for their 100th celebration. You know, if anybody who's been in Uptown has probably seen people walking around wearing pink and green this week, and that's the Alpha Kappa Alpha people. So.
Okay. Neat.
All right. Well, it was a good piece, and you can listen to that, of course, at WFAE.org.
Where you are right now if you're listening to the podcast.
Exactly. Well, we could talk about the sales tax that, you know, Mecklenburg County might not be able to ask voters to approve and all that. But
we will talk about
that. Yeah, we will. We will. But it's not as interesting as the appointment, Governor McCrory's appointment of Valerie Macon as Poet Laureate, and who is
Valerie. The firestorm of controversy.
It was nuts.
Can we start calling this Poetgate?
Poetgate. I think we can. I think it qualifies
like
as that.
Poetgate.
She is works in the Department of Health and Human Services, I believe.
Yes.
And
she's self-published.
Self-published a couple poetry books, and is obviously very, you know, loves poetry. I think that's probably fair to say. But she didn't have the credentials a lot of people in the literary community wanted, and more importantly, I guess they weren't consulted, which is the tradition for the North Carolina Arts Council to make recommendations. People apply or submit applications, and they make recommendations to the governor. And governor just appointed her. And Governor McCrory defended the choice, saying, "Hey, I didn't know about the traditional process. We'll review it, but."
It was online.
What was online?
The selection process.
Oh, I'm sure.
Basically, right. He said that he. I have the quote right here. We were not aware of the traditional process that was in place, meaning consulting the Arts Council mm-hmm. and letting them submit names for nomination and then selecting one of those. It wasn't written down anywhere on the walls, McCrory said.
You would think the head of the North Carolina Department of Cultural Resources would at least know about it too and inform him of this. And so maybe she did. Who knows? But he also, of course, a line that got a lot of attention was he also thinks that these things should be available for people that aren't always part of the standard or even elite groups that have been in place for a long time, obviously directed at the Arts Council.
Right. Well, let's back up for a second here, though. I mean, I think that you know, there's two things that happened here, right? Mm-hmm. It's one, first there was the appointment, and there was the initial story about it, which was either the News and Observer or the Charlotte Observer. They did the initial
Charlotte
story.
Observer.
It was the Charlotte Observer. Okay. And they like looked into it and did that. And I think that, you know, and that sort of, you know, definitely created the first part of the controversy. Got some people kind of outspoken mm-hmm. about it. We did a story following up.
Yes,
McFadden
we did.
Here did a story following about picking it up, and then NPR.
And he did a story for NPR too.
Picked it up nationally. And I was joking yesterday. You know what could get your classic stereotypical NPR listeners more upset
yes.
than the errant selection of a poet laureate. But I mean, I think that also, unlike some other selections, whether, you know, for some more technical, more important, you know, positions,
right.
You know, the Department of Health and Human Services, where there's been controversy over that pick, or, you know, the
head of Deaner or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, that's a good example as well. You know, those, I think that, you know, usually require a little bit more
vetting.
I think that to understand what the controversy is, you have to have a little bit more context.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this one, really, when people read about it, that, you know, self-published two books, when the Valerie Macon, who McCrory appointed, had two self-published books, and the standard has been for someone who's really sort of distinguished themselves in this field.
Sure.
And so that was the initial part of the controversy. But what I love about it is that, yeah, those comments that you were talking about by Governor McCrory just they were not an apology. They were not instead of, you know, doing anything to quell it, it was defiant. And it was just fuel on the fire.
Did some of the reaction, in fact, prove his point, though? I mean, because some of the reaction was just downright mean to her. And she seems to.
I think that there's so my take on this is, yes, you're right. There was an article that you pointed out in Slate. I mean, talking about national pickup,
right.
Quoting another story that had just really torn into Valerie Macon.
It was by an alternative magazine and a newspaper out of the Raleigh-Durham
area. And isn't that kind of what, like, the internet does? I understand that was in a magazine, but, you know, I mean, just people are going to trash people, and mm-hmm. I think that it's sad that that's the case. I think that it's sad that she suffered any kind of personal attacks mm-hmm. over this.
But it's also hard to even criticize the governor's move without sort of insulting her as well. I mean, you can say he should have gone through the process.
No.
You could say he could have gone through the process, but then when you explain it and you're like, hey, she's only self-published twice and, you know, she's not acclaimed
criticism, but that's not being mean.
Oh, well, I'm not saying be mean. I'm saying it is an insult, though, to her. It's not being mean. And I think it's a very fair thing to point out, obviously. But you know, it's
well, this is what I would say is that I think that, and this was sort of the really where I, you know, the governor's follow-up comments kind of caught me off guard personally. I, you know, just in terms of, you know, again, kind of, you know, we talk about strategy a lot on here in terms of the strategy here. It's really a simple matter of resume,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
I mean, I don't think that it's insulting to her. I mean, yes, there have been people who have insulted the actual quality of her poetry. But that's kind of, as far as I can tell, you know, from my English minor in college, right? Isn't that just sort of what people, I mean, people pretty much criticize everyone's poetry. If you're in the public eye, you're going to have your poetry trashed. And unfortunately, I think that she in particular has gotten a lot of flack because her resume is thin, that it's become easier for people to make fun of her poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether her poetry is good or bad or anything like that, but I do know that, you know, just looking at it, I think pretty, you know, empirically that the resume is more thin, and so I think that creates a problem when the governor then responds, essentially, he says, we've got to open up opportunities for people that aren't always a part of the standard or even elite groups. That's the kind of reference to the Arts Council. And it's good to welcome new voices and new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem here is that the governor, as far as we know, is not a poet and certainly is not a distinguished poet.
I think that's fair to say.
and I think that it shows a real disrespect for a field to to say, well, you know what? We need to disregard your established traditions and your established critiques of work and your established kind of process of how someone becomes a veteran poet or a distinguished poet. You know, we have to throw that process aside. I mean, you would never do that for other fields, and obviously that's poetry is more ephemeral than something like, let's say, medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I mean, if you would never do that if someone, you'd never say, well, you know what, for our Surgeon General, we're gonna pick someone who's just started their residency.
This whole thing, kind of reminds me of what here are the folks who kind of vet the public arts projects for funding. Every other year, the city council gets together and they have a presentation about what gets public art funding. And mm-hmm. I remember, when McCrory was mayor. Some of those conversations were just...
he has demonstrated, he has said things in the past where... it's reasonable construe. He has a problem with these artistic groups.
The people giving those presentations, I think, could get flustered. I mean, there were lots of comments like, why are we putting up abstract art around the city? We need more figures of people who have done this and that,
To help the city or whatever.
Yeah,
but also, you remember his first year as governor, I believe it was, right, where at least you covered some of it, basically kind of pushes toward it seemed like pushes away from humanities in college. And do you remember what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's made some comments about the usefulness of liberal arts degrees.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's and this certainly plays into that.
I enjoyed a poetry response to this. It's Greg LaCour, who writes for Charlotte Magazine, taking off of Allen Ginsberg's poem Howl. His poem is called Fowl, and I just wanted to read the first couple lines. I saw the best scribes of my political commonwealth gobsmacked by rudeness, carping, hysterical, royally irked, tweed-headed hipsters yearning for the verbal connection in the independently owned coffee shop and used bookstore who pass through universities Elon and App State and UNC Greensboro, wondering aloud who in the world this lady is. And it goes on from that. But I just got a kick out of the whole poem. It was really funny. Yeah. Well, funny response.
We got a lot of opportunities for, we had our host on air reading.
Own Duncan McFadden. Yes.
Right, reading in verse.
Okay. Let's listen to that right now. This is the intro that Kevin Kniestad read for Duncan McFadden's story.
There once was a governor named Pat, who thought in verse this state should not lack. So he picked a poet to be our state laureate, but his pick others found out of whack. To explain what has happened, here's Duncan McFadden.
Obviously, I think we had a little bit of fun with this story, too.
Yeah.
We go into the week. There's all this other stuff, Common Core, the budget, and the stuff you expect
this
to be
really
an issue.
Came
this
out
really
nowhere.
Came out of nowhere.
I mean, oh, man.
But she has. We have not made this clear. She has resigned. No, nothing's been said about this, I guess.
Yeah.
What, ready to move on, guys?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the sales tax.
Yeah,
right?
Let's do that. Okay. Right. Well, the legislature or the
This kind of came out of nowhere, too, this week.
Yeah, it did. Senator Bob Rucho is striking again. He has, of course, been behind the effort to take the airport out of Charlotte's control. Now he has moved to limit Mecklenburg County's ability to ask voters to approve a quarter cent sales tax hike to help fund pay raises for teachers and fund arts groups and
arts libraries and CPCC.
Yeah, arts libraries and CPCC. Thank you. It's passed out of Senate Finance Committee. Legislation stalled a little bit, but this is just another example of Raleigh coming in and saying, "Hey, you can't do this," limiting the power of local governments.
Well, it seems pretty clear that yes, this is and I think that Rucho was saying that it was not related to the plan to put. So basically, what's going to happen is they're going to put a referendum on this year's ballot to raise the sales tax by a quarter,
a quarter cent,
by a quarter cent. Thank you. Yeah. And A quarter would be a lot, but by a quarter cent. And then they're going to use that, yes, to fund all those different things. And then this bill comes out that essentially Charlotte sales tax is already at 2.5%, and this bill limits it to 2.5%, meaning that that referendum would no longer work. Now, yeah, Ruscio says this is not related. It's hard to think that it's not related because this happened. It's interesting because Ruscio is a Mecklenburg County
representative. And this is really the only county it impacts. I mean, it impacts all the counties, you know,
technically, but
they aren't trying to raise their sales tax. And Wake, for example, has one that's higher, but they're grandfathered in. So, I mean, it's very specifically at least this year would impact Mecklenburg County.
I think that there's a real struggle, like just over, you know, in terms of who's governing. You think about Ruscio, who is a Republican, but from Mecklenburg County, right? And you think about, you know, the dominance that the Republicans have in Raleigh. And then you think about the Democrats controlling the state government down here. What I think that the local Republicans in the state house have realized is that they have the ability to have a more active role in essentially a market where they've traditionally been shut out. And in that sense, I mean, you could argue that they're doing their job, right? I mean, if you're elected to govern in Mecklenburg County and you have the ability to affect how the, you know, what the sales tax is and you're kind of, you've been elected on a platform of keeping taxes low and those kinds of things, right? And you have the ability to sort of trump what the local county government does, then, you know, you're still doing your job. You're governing.
And some of them come from areas that are of the county, even though from Mecklenburg County, but he's from a conservative area and his constituents and his part of Mecklenburg County might like this.
Yeah, absolutely. But what's developed is, right, is then you've got this struggle we've seen in the airports. It's a great example of it, I think, right, where it's sort of portrayed as, and I think that we often think of it as, I mean, in some degree it is, Charlotte or the Mecklenburg County versus Raleigh. But in reality, I think that, you know, when it's these people, when it's representatives from this area and they're the ones pushing it, in some way you have local Republicans versus local Democrats. And it's just that the local Republicans have realized that they actually have a stronger hand to play because they can get support for what are called local bills from the other members from other areas. So I think that this is another example of that. And it's just, yeah, and on one hand, you could argue that it's Raleigh governing Mecklenburg County. On the other hand, it's you could just argue it's just Republicans versus Democrats. And Republicans have realized another way to kind of win here.
And there's also kind of this sense of inevitability about it that, well, if the legislature is going to do that, they're going to do that, and we don't have much power over that.
Right, and that's the way that the system of government that in North Carolina works, which is essentially that the state has far, far more power, including over local ordinances and local property, right? So they can take, even though there's a court fight right now, you know, technically they have the ability to take an asset and turn it over to the state or turn it over to something else. There's tax implications and things that could make it more complicated. But we've seen this in Asheville with their water plant and with the airport in Asheville.
They put a lot of effort into fighting the airport legislation. That didn't really do much good. Charlotte officials.
Well, we haven't seen if it's done.
But that's because of the court. The legislation got changed.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. They have not had any success in any of these issues in terms of changing the legislature's mind, in terms of saying, whoa, we don't want this. The legislature has been very unsympathetic to that.
All right. Final topic. Little fun piece you had this week, starting off the week about signs.
Speaking of signs, there's a
farmer's market off Rocky River Road is trying to put up a sign because the road doesn't go by their market anymore.
They want to put up a sign. Yeah. And it turns out that is a lot more complicated than you might think.
We have a 73-page sign ordinance.
We have a 73-page sign ordinance that governs all things signs. So it's basically, it tells you what signs you can put up if you're a business, where you can put them up, how you have to register them, how they have to be approved, how big they can be, what kinds of graphics they can have on it, you know, how large the font can be, what kind of banners underneath. There are specific exemptions. There are and you think about this. What got me was that this is not like a Charlotte thing. Apparently, talking to city officials, and the way I heard about this was I came across an email from the city manager to. To a city councilman.
I love that email. Mayor Michael Barnes shared it with all of us.
To Mayor Pro Tem Michael Barnes. Right. Yeah. It was, and essentially the email, I think I have it memorized at this point. He says, unfortunately, signs are a legal morass wherein I have never found a simple way to do anything. And then I talked to an assistant city manager who's been sort of coordinating this multi-departmental government group to figure out this way to let this farmer's market put up a sign. And she said the same thing. She's been in Rocky Mount before. She's been in Florida before. And she just said, yeah, they're always a nightmare. And basically the problem that they're dealing with in this particular case is that this farmer's market is, yeah, it's at the end of this long dead end of Rocky River Road, this part where Rocky River Road dead ends. It didn't used to. Right before it would hit, I think it's Old Concord.
Mm-hmm.
So they're at the very end of it now. It's hard for people to find. So they were putting signs up at the corner of the nearest intersection, which is roughly half a mile away on Harris. And A-frame signs in Charlotte are illegal. So you can't put those up except for, you know, again, very few sort of exceptions. And you can't put signs off premises except for, again, very few exceptions, like usually like campaign signs, for instance. You know, people can put those up, whatever. So they had permission, according to the farmers market people, they had permission to use other people's private land, but it still violates the sign ordinance. So
and they were just putting it up one day a week, right?
Putting it up one day a week for the hours that they were open on Saturdays. This is the Newell Farmers Market over on Rocky
River. So why
River
can't
Road.
They do that? What's the big deal?
Well, it violates the sign ordinance. Right. And, you know, you can't and you can't play favorites. There are specific things where you can't just exempt one business. Mm-hmm. You can't create an exception for one business. You can't overlook one business. That's illegal. So the city wants the sign. They want them to be able to do it. They, you know, like farmers market. This is pretty innocuous.
Right.
But they're trying to figure out how do you write a change into the sign ordinance that doesn't create like this big loophole. And, you know, you think about this. I mean, people are very finicky about, you know, anything in their neighborhood.
Sure.
Right. So they're all trying to figure it out. And the best part is that anything that they decide to do, the city council has to vote on. So you need the full city council to vote to create a way for this one farmer's market, this one family-run farmer's market to put up a sign.
All right. Another edition WFA Talks. This was the 25th edition, by the way.
Ah.
25.
All right.
Yep. All right, guys.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks.